Nation Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. This is For Liberty. I am your host, Nick, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Be sure to check out the website. Go ahead and get some advertising space on there if you got something to sell, or pick up something that's up for sale on there from one of the people who are already advertising. And if you got some spare change in your pocket, feel free to send it our way as a donation. Help keep us on the air. We are alternative media. We are 100% listener supported. So every little bit helps to keep us on the air. Tonight I got an interview with Joe Jorgensen, who is the Libertarian Party's nominee for president. Which was actually very nice of her. She gave me a lot of extra time. She makes some very good points, especially considering the Libertarian Party platform and considering that the Republican and the Democrat platform hasn't been working out so well. You know, it's a kind of a nice change to listen to somebody who's running for president and push these. Ron Paul pushed him hard, but Ron Paul also ran as a Republican for reasons that he had talked about, like you can't win unless you're one of the two major parties. And the Republican Party stomped all over him. So she was kind enough to come on and give me a lot, like I said, a lot of extra time compared to what we were scheduled for. So I'm going to hit the playback button and let you guys listen to the Libertarian Party nomination for president.
Okay, Joe, welcome to the show. You are the Libertarian Party nominee for president of the United States. Congratulations.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So give us a little bit about what your platform is so people can get a feel for who you are.
So my three things are healthcare, bringing the troops home, and the environment. And I think these are all important issues, and they're issues that the Americans care about. If you don't mind, I'd like to start with healthcare.
Right now,
the biggest myth I want to overcome is the one perpetrated by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and then all of these media people out there, which is that since the current free market system doesn't work, we need single payer. And I'd like to point out that we do not have a free market system and that we haven't had one since at least World War II. And if we did have a free market system, it would work so much better than what we have now. And to just give you, and I've got all sorts of arguments for this, but I would just like to give you one quick fact, which is that if you look at the two free market, the two fields that are more free market than others, and that would be LASIK and cosmetic surgery, because people pay for it with their own money, not the insurance companies. Prices have gone down steadily, and quality has gone way up because they have to compete with each other. And I wish the entire healthcare system were like that, in which knee surgeons and heart surgeons, in which they all had to compete for their business, just like car dealerships and computer manufacturers do.
Yeah, I would say that the healthcare system hasn't been free market since 1900, when the Rockefellers pretty much hijacked the entire thing. I did some research after I did an interview last year with Howard Strauss, who was Max Gerson's grandson. I've been cutting a video together of that interview, and it just led me down rabbit holes like mad with the amount of information that was coming out of it. Now, the Rockefeller Foundation basically destroyed healthcare in America.
Yeah, and that's why you should say at least World War II, because, I mean, if you go back further, of course, there's licensing and all that. What I think dramatically changed healthcare was that around World War II, they had the wage and price freeze control.
Right.
And this is just one more example of government trying to fix a problem and causing 10 new problems. So companies wanted to, of course, hire the best people, and they weren't allowed to give raises. They weren't allowed to offer higher salaries for better employees. So they got around that by offering health insurance, by offering benefits. And because of that, we are now the only industrialized nation in the world who has health insurance tied to employment. And it's because of that World War II wage and price freeze. So, but you're right. We could go back probably 100 years from now. We could probably go back to the 1700s and find problems. Right. But I just think that was a huge turning point, because what we have now is we have a lot of people who are working for somebody who can't or doesn't offer health insurance. And what are they supposed to do? How are they supposed to compete against the big corporations?
Yeah, I've worked plenty of jobs where that wasn't an option. And you know what? I didn't worry about it. But also, you know, this whole thing with like Obamacare, where people were forced into getting health insurance. And if they didn't, then they got a penalty on their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people who were getting put into they were losing their property because of what the entire socialized healthcare system did. What would be your idea? What would you want to put in instead?
I think that Singapore offers a great example, which is the same way that the state of Indiana did it, in which people are in charge of their own health care dollars. Now, I don't want to get into the exact nuts and bolts, but they do it through a health savings account. But I would just like to point out that when people spend their own money, they shop for prices. And what's really interesting is that in the state of Indiana, when they first started the program, only about 10% of the people used generic medication, which is one way to cut down on costs, by the way.
Right.
After only a year or two, 90% of the people were using generic drugs, and they were happy to do so because they got to keep the savings. And that's the way it should be. Whenever you buy a car or buy gas for your car or buy groceries, if you shop around for the lowest price, you get to keep the money that you save.
Right.
And that's not what we have right now. People just go out, you know, a lot of times you can't even get a price ahead of time. But what does it matter to you? You just charge it to the insurance company and they pay for it. And so if you look at Singapore, who has true competition, look at their prices compared to ours. A heart bypass in the U.S. costs about $130,000. In Singapore, it only costs $18,000. So we're talking about insurance companies here who are denying claims because they cost too much. Well, heck, in Singapore, a lot of people here buy a car for $18,000. Granted, they have to make payments, but it's not out of reach for a lot of Americans.
Right. Yeah, I know people who, just based on their age, were denied certain healthcare procedures, and because of that, they can't even walk anymore.
It's tragic. And, you know, here's where I think Sarah Palin got a bad rap. She talked about the death panels.
Right.
Well, we saw that in action with the coronavirus. Over in Italy, if you are over 80 years of age, you know, because they have single payer, because, well, they've got kind of a, you know, socialist blend. They're all a little different, but we're basically talking socialism. And what happened there is anybody over the age of 80 was basically just given a bed and said, sorry, we don't have enough hospital beds. We don't have enough ventilators. So that essentially was a death panel saying we can't treat you.
Well, they did the kind of almost the same thing here in a way when they started shuffling off people who are diagnosed with coronavirus into nursing homes.
Yes, New York City. Uh-huh. Yes, everybody was praising the mayor for what a good job he was doing, and then it looks like he increased the spread. That is tragic. And once again, I tell people that I'm running for president because government is too big, too bossy, too nosy, and they usually hurt the people they try to help. There's a perfect example. We leave it in charge of the bureaucrats, and we get disaster.
Yeah, and they're always so helpful when you get them on the phone, too.
Yes. We're here to serve. Exactly. Uh-huh.
It's like watching some of the earlier South Park episodes with the police officer. And instead of to protect and serve on the side of his car, it said to patronize and annoy.
Oh, yes. Officer Bob, is that who you're talking about?
Bar Brady.
Yes.
Officer Bar Brady.
Yeah, I think South Park is great. And especially since one of the creators is a libertarian.
Yeah, they have a pretty decent philosophy when people start going after them for some of their episodes. And they say, hey, look, we make fun of everything and we leave nothing behind. Because the second you say that's off limits, that's when you run into problems.
Exactly.
Now, as far as the other, because this is something that Donald Trump said he was going to do and for 3 years hasn't done it yet. Which is, and you brought it up, which is bring the troops home.
Yes.
Why are we still in the Middle East fighting these little proxy wars and over something that happened 18 years ago and we still never went to the right place?
That's what I'd like to ask Donald Trump in a debate on the debate stage, and I hope I can. You know, what's ironic here is that the purpose of the military is to keep us safe. And what the military has been doing is making us less safe. And, you know, let me quickly add, of course, there was absolutely no justification for bin Laden to gather up the people and make an attack and fly airplanes into buildings. However, because we were over there, he could justify it to his followers. And he kept pointing out, look, the Americans said they were going to be here temporarily, and they're not. They said they were going to be out by this date, and they're still here. And he would use it to rile them up against us. If we hadn't been over there, it would have been a lot harder for him to justify that to his followers. And in addition to making us less safe, just look at the money. Why are we in Europe? Let France and Germany, let them defend themselves. So we've got poor people here paying taxes that are going to support other countries' military. That's obscene.
Yeah, I think Ron Paul, when he was running for president in 2008 and 2012, he summed it up pretty good. He said the reason that they're attacking us over here is because we're over there.
That's an excellent way to put it. I'm a huge Ron Paul fan. That's an excellent way to put it. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah, and all the meddling that we do in these other countries. Now, I'm being ex-military myself. You know, I have no issue with having a defensive army, a defensive navy, or any of that. But we don't need to be over there bombing these other countries, especially if you look at the official narrative of 9/11. It was 19 hijackers, most of them were from Saudi Arabia. So what's our option? Naturally, we have to go and invade Iraq.
Of course. You know? Of course. Yeah, and I'd like to respond to a couple of your points. First of all, you mentioned Ron Paul. A lot of people don't realize that, I believe it was in the 2012 election when he was running for the Republican nomination, soldiers overseas, you know, because they could look at the absentee ballots. They were you know, absentee as opposed to voting in the polls, more soldiers supported Ron Paul than any other candidate. And also, if you look at the contributions from the soldiers, more of it went to Ron Paul than all the other candidates combined. And people were shocked, like, that doesn't make any sense. But you have to separate the many fine soldiers. And by the way, thank you so much for your service. I really appreciate it. My dad was in the military as well. He was in the Navy. So we have people who sign up on good faith to defend our country, and it's not their fault they're sent over to where we don't want to be. And you mentioned Trump. Well, Trump said he was going to get us out. He hasn't. What he's done is he's kind of moved some people around, or he moves people out of an area and puts in drones. That's still a presence, and it's still causing problems.
Yeah, not to mention, again, the amount of money that's being spent, you know, to keep this financed.
Oh, yeah. If you look at it, we are, our budget is three times the budget of the next larger, of the next size. We could cut, and that's what I would do. I would cut two-thirds of the military budget, bring the troops home. We would still be tied for the largest military on this earth. And what my campaign slogan is, turn America into one giant Switzerland, armed and neutral. I want to defend our borders. I want the best military out there to defend our country. There's no reason we need to be out in the rest of the world.
Yes, which, and people, I don't think they know that much about Switzerland, but during World War II, they were one of the few countries that was never invaded by Germany.
Exactly. And exactly. And one of the reasons I like to point to Switzerland is sometimes when you tell people who aren't familiar, you know, with foreign affairs, you tell them that you want to bring the troops home, and their immediate reaction sometimes is, oh, well, I don't want to be an isolationist. So I like to point out Switzerland because everybody knows they trade with other countries. They allow tourists in. It's not like they're isolated from the rest of the country. In fact, I want goods to cross the borders, because when goods cross the borders, soldiers don't have to. And that's what we need to do to keep the peace.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that the Democrats and the Republican Party both hijacked this narrative from Ron Paul's campaign when he talked about bringing the troops home, you know, and stop running an empire. They pegged him as an isolationist. They backed him into a corner. You couldn't get away from that. Everybody that I tried to talk to who didn't know Ron Paul all that well, that's all they could talk about was what an isolationist he was.
Yep, and that's exactly why I say we need to turn America into one giant Switzerland, because people know that, hey, Switzerland, they're nice people. They talk to us. They talk to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I mean, and it was all about doing free trade. That was his other big thing, was free trade, which is one of the other libertarian principles I like, is the free markets.
Yeah, in fact, I'd like to tell you a little story here. In the early 80s, I was driving a Fiat Spider, and I parked in a parking lot, and I saw this older gentleman coming towards me with a real scowl on his face. And I thought, oh my gosh, I hope I didn't cut him off. I didn't mean to do anything. And he comes over, explains that he's a veteran of World War II, and asks me, how dare I drive an Italian car? Now, because he served our country, of course, I don't want to get into an argument with him. But what I wanted to say was, look, if we're buying cars from Italy, they're not going to bomb us. You know, you tend to not kill your best customers. Why don't we have to worry about Japan and another Pearl Harbor attack? It's because we buy so many Toyotas and Hondas. So as long as we have free trade, and, you know, since you brought this up about free trade, I mean, we need free trade, not fair trade, because my question to that is, fair according to whose standards? If you have two people who can freely choose to trade on whatever product or service they want at whatever price they think is fair, then why does the government need to get involved?
Yeah, they definitely got their fingers in every little aspect of our lives, which is one of the things that bothers me most. And you're talking, it's funny because when you were talking about how Italy's not going to bomb us because we're good customers of theirs, there was a thing a few years ago where Al Qaeda or ISIS or whatever brand name they decided to go by at that time, they were talking about poisoning the cocaine supply coming from south of the border. Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah, that's a really good plan. We can kill a bunch of Americans this way. The drug cartels stepped in and said, you're not going to do that. Otherwise, we're coming over there. And ISIS backed off. So we were actually saved a little bit by the drug cartels because they didn't want to lose their customer base.
You know, so even the drug cartels are looking out for us. Yeah, in fact, my husband and I were walking in a neighborhood that's not known to be the best neighborhood. And this guy comes running across the yard and, hey, how you doing, whatever. And so after we, you know, kept walking, we said, and I just turned to the guy and I said, no, we're good, thanks. And we kept going. And my husband asked me, what was that all about? And I said, well, this kind of neighborhood, I wouldn't be surprised if he was just giving us good customer service because he's a drug dealer. So I just wanted to let him know, you know, hey, nice to see you. You know, and by the way, let me, you know, for the record, no, I don't do drugs, never have. I jokingly say that bourbon is my drug of choice.
Right.
But even drug dealers, yes, they understand good customer service, and that's why we need a free market, because I want people, as I mentioned in healthcare, I want people to compete for our business, and that includes drugs such as alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana. And if we could sell those legally instead of through the channels we have now, then a lot of our problems would go away, because many of our problems are not from the drugs themselves, but rather the prohibition of drugs, just like we had so many problems with alcohol prohibition, funding organized crime.
Right. Well, yeah, I was going to say that prohibition basically gave rise to the mafia in the United States.
Exactly.
So, again, government gets involved, it usually turns out bad. You know, there's no other way to say it. They really, the way our government is right now, they usually, if they get their fingers on it, they screw it up every single time.
Exactly. And what we have now, again, the problems are even bigger. And one thing I like to ask people is, when's the last time you heard of a liquor store owner out on the school playground or in the halls of a high school trying to sell gin? Or when's the last time you heard of somebody trying to break into a house because they've got a vodka habit? When you've got legal drugs, you've got legal drug prices, and then people don't have to resort to crime. And, you know, if it doesn't bother you that somebody's at home drinking wine, then why should it bother you that they're at home smoking a joint? And I would like to distinguish, you know, some people say, well, what about driving? Well, absolutely. Anybody caught driving under the influence of drugs, they need to be dealt with harshly, just like people who are under the influence of alcohol should be dealt with harshly.
Yeah, and unfortunately, what a lot of people don't get is right now the biggest drug pusher in the country is the federal government.
Oh, I don't disagree. I would like to hear your position on that.
Well, here's the thing. This is personal experience and people that I know. When I go to the Veterans Administration, I've talked about this on this show multiple times. When I go to the VA because of back issues, and I tell them straight up, do not give me any narcotics because I will not take them. The first thing that they do is they give me narcotics.
Yep.
And I know people who have gone to the Veterans Administration for various reasons, and they get, the VA gives them so much drugs that they actually become hardcore addicted. Then the VA cuts them off, says, no, you're cut off. You're too much. You might become an addict. Well, they already are. These people are so strung out and they start getting all kinds of drug sick that they go out and they do commit the crimes in order to get money for dope, and they have to get the dope elsewhere.
Exactly. And could I point out a few other things regarding that? Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't even think we would have had an opioid crisis if marijuana were legal and doctors could prescribe that, because that is not nearly as addictive. And I really don't even think there's any physiological addiction anyway. I know there's a little bit of debate over that, but we all know it's not nearly as addictive as opioids. And also, once the government gets involved, again, things get out of hand.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And let me mention another example. I'm sure if you're a fan of Ron Paul, you're probably a fan of Milton Friedman, right?
Yes. Yes, I am.
I love Milton Friedman. I get to meet him in person. I got to ride in a private plane from California to Texas. It was like one of the dreams of my life here. So he pointed out that had cocaine never been illegal, we would have never had I may have too many negatives there. Let me rephrase it to make it easier to follow. Because cocaine was illegal, we ended up with crack cocaine. Because economically, cocaine would have been cheap enough that it would have made absolutely no sense to make crack cocaine. But because cocaine was illegal, it made economic sense to invent crack cocaine. And we all know that crack cocaine is so much more addictive than cocaine. In fact, when I was in high school, we had to take a drug class to, learn about drugs and, kind of the whole just say no, although this was before just say no. And I was actually taught that cocaine was not addictive. The correct answer on that test is nope, there's no physiological addiction to cocaine. And now we know that, yes, it is physiologically addictive. It's just addictive in a different manner. It takes a longer time and it's a different kind of addiction. So, once again, we end up with crack cocaine because the government tries to solve one problem but creates another.
Well, if you're familiar with Gary Webb and his stories that he published in the San Jose Mercury, the government was actually bringing the coke into the country for the crack, to be processed into crack, and it devastated the inner cities.
And wow.
Using the money to fund Iran-Contra. There was government levels on all kinds of it. Barry Seals was bringing it in, and he was running with the DEA and the CIA to do Iran-Contra. So, it was a huge – our government was using drugs to fund their little covert wars.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not familiar with Gary Webb, but that sounds interesting.
Yeah, he was a pretty good writer. He's the one who actually exploded the story about the government involvement in the cocaine trade and everything. And, well, of course, the government does what they usually do. They completely discredited the guy, and later on he committed suicide by two gunshots to the back of the head.
Of course, yes. Of course.
So, but yeah. He wrote some really interesting stories. I do remember when that whole situation blew up. People were really mad because they watched their neighborhoods just turn into like these just jungles.
And the example I gave was selling liquor in the school.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see two liquor store owners having it out with machine guns because one of them invaded the other corner. You've got liquor stores peacefully selling liquor in their own stores. There's no gunfire that I've ever seen among liquor store owners.
Well, and the other aspect of that too, on the legalization of it, is we wouldn't be overcrowding these prisons for crimes where nobody else was, there's no other injured party.
Yeah, exactly. What my campaign promise includes, and I can only do this at the federal level, of course, but I hope the states would follow suit, is on my first day in office to pardon all nonviolent crimes, such as simple drug use. And of course, I'm not talking about the people with the machine guns who created problems, who created violence with drugs. I'm talking about just innocent people at home who wanted to use drugs just like I use bourbon. So I would pardon all nonviolent drug users, sex workers, gambling, anything having to do with simple gun ownership, anything like that. And of course, many of the people who are incarcerated who shouldn't be, such as Julian Assange and Albright.
And Ed Snowden.
Yep, Edward Snowden, exactly.
Because you mentioned gun ownership, I always have to ask this because I'm a huge Second Amendment supporter. What would your position be as far as the Second Amendment goes and all these laws that have been cropping up for 100 years that pretty much fly in the face of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights?
Yes, that we do have a Second Amendment, and we need to get rid of every single gun law that's been enacted in the past 100 years. And I am a gun owner, and there's no reason to have all of these laws which don't do anything anyway, because, you know, since when do criminals say, oh, well, guns are outlawed, so I guess I can't buy a gun? No, they go under, underneath to get theirs. So, in fact, if you think about it, you can say, and I'm looking at states, for instance. There are many states who are saying, well, maybe we should crack down on guns. You know, maybe we should outlaw guns. And my response is, yeah, because it works so well with drugs. You know, we outlawed drugs and nobody uses heroin, do they?
Nope.
So that's not going to work. And these red flag laws are really scary because basically you're giving individuals the right to take away the Second Amendment without a fair trial.
Without any due process at all.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and I mention this all the time. If people really want to see what the end game of that is, look at this documentary called Innocence Betrayed. And it gives you a history of the genocides that took place during the 20th century. And what was the precursor to every single one of them was disarming the citizenry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So,
and also the idea that, well, you don't need a gun because the police can be there. The police can't be everywhere. And I am a woman, and I have been a single woman, and I can tell you that a gun is a great equalizer. I could probably be overpowered by almost any 200-pound man who broke into my house. And just look at some of the riots we've had. We're having looting now, but if you look back at Rodney King, there were store owners with assault rifles sitting in their stores who the police absolutely could not get to. And there are so many – you hear of so many stories in which somebody was hiding, they called 911, and the police just got there too late.
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, during the Rodney King riots, I was one of the people sitting on top of a rooftop with a shotgun.
Oh, really?
Yes. Not downtown L.A. It was in the San Fernando Valley, but we knew the store owner, and he wasn't armed, so me and another guy, we sat up on the roof, and nobody came by the stores. We were pretty thankful about that. But, yeah, we were sitting up there waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, and that was the prevention. Right.
Right. And just to switch tracks here real quick, because this one is always a real big one with me, because I don't know what goes through the heads of people in Congress. I can't get a straight answer out of my congressman or my senator. What is going on with the economy in the United States that the government cannot stop spending money?
Yeah, and I like to point out, you know, the reason that Trump lost in the polls, the reason all of the polls were so inaccurate and didn't predict that he would win, is because he attracted people who either had never voted or hadn't voted in 20 years. And there were people who said, we are sick and tired of the same old, same old. We want something different. And they thought they were electing somebody different with Trump. And he turns out to be just as big of a spender as everybody else. So I'd like to point out that if Trump can't make government smaller because, you know, look, he doesn't have 40 years of political favors to pay back. If Trump can't get government smaller, then I don't have hope that any Republican or Democrat could get government smaller. And my hope is that a lot of those people who are looking for something different will look towards my campaign.
I don't think they want to make government smaller.
Well, I don't think the politicians do, but I do believe that there are citizens who do, both Democrats and Republicans, who think that government is too big. So I think Americans want smaller government. In fact, I've even asked people, is government too big or is government too small? And when they're asked the question, is government too small? They usually laugh. You know, of course it's not too small. So it's basically the American voters being lied to by the politicians or being promised one thing and then having their promise broken and they get something else.
Yeah. And watching Donald Trump sign these economic bills, the stimulus package, whatever that was, that $1.3 trillion to keep government, make sure that government stays open, which if you really watch them do a government shutdown, 85% of the government is still open. And they're getting rid of non-essential workers during the shutdown. It's like, well, if they're non-essential, why are they there?
Yeah, well, and I'd like to point out that all of these people who are shutting down the rest of the country, they still get to work. If you're mayor of New York City, if you're the governor of a state, if you're president, you still get your paycheck. You don't have to go wait tables. You don't have to stand behind a register in a store. You get to do your business remotely. In fact, in my own town, I don't know if this person was local. She might have been national, but I saw a local news report on an epidemiologist who was PhD working from her computer at home saying we all need to stay home for another 2 months. And I thought, well, easy for you to say. You're a PhD. You can work from home and I'm sure you're still getting a very nice salary. What about the other people who can't afford it? And now we've got tens of millions of people out of work and some of those jobs will never come back.
Yeah. And it's kind of laughable, but not in a funny way when you look at what they deemed essential and non-essential. You notice that the government and the bureaucracies were all deemed essential.
Oh, of course. We can't live without them, can we? And what I found most humorous was that there were reports that there were lobbyists. Now, these are not government employees, okay? These are the special interests. And these lobbyists were saying that they were essential because they were the ones that helped write the laws. And the Congress people could not write the laws without them. How blatant is that?
That's borderline criminal, if you ask me.
That just brings it to light.
That our people in our Congress are not able to write the laws because without the lobbyists.
Yes.
How much money were they floating around in bribes and all of that? Well, that was one of the great things I liked about Ron Paul also is when lobbyists would come knocking on his door in D.C., he would chase them off.
Yeah.
Tell them to go away.
And also the fact that lobbyists are doing the actual writing tells you that those laws that are being written are going to be awfully favorable to them. It's one thing, you know, it's bad enough to have a lobbyist go to a congressperson and say, hey, I'd like you to support this. But for the lobbyist to actually write the law, you know, it's going to be a lot worse than it would be otherwise.
Yeah. And Mussolini had a very great terminology for that. And he said, and it was fascism.
Mm-hmm.
And he said fascism more outrightly be called corporatism, because that's exactly what it is, the merging of corporation and government.
Exactly. And so many, I meet so many people on the left who are against big greedy corporations. And I try to explain how so many of these corporations get their power from the government. Mm-hmm. It's big government giving power to the big corporations to help write the laws, to help keep the markets unfair, and to help keep competition out.
Exactly. So here's my question for you then. What would you do to try to rein the economy in and cut spending? And the biggest one of all, what would you do with the Federal Reserve Bank?
Well, Federal Reserve Bank, I would first audit it and then abolish it. I'm with Ron Paul on that. For the economy, where I would cut spending, that was your general question, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we already talked about the military. If we cut the military by two-thirds, we're still tied for the largest military, and we're cutting out a lot of money. I would also go to Social Security. First of all, have an immediate opt-out for younger people because they know the system's broken. They know it's just a Ponzi scheme. And just tell them, okay, you get to take your retirement dollars and put them anywhere you like. Now, for the older people, for the retirees who paid in for 50 or 60 years, I would tell them, look, your money did not go into a lockbox. Instead, it was used to pay for government buildings and just other various government things. So what we're going to do is we're going to sell a lot of those government assets, and we're going to give you your money back so that you can have a safe, secure retirement, not under the whims of Congress. And that would save us a huge chunk as well. And we can cut the government over in half just by those two things alone.
And I would just make the suggestion that maybe we should like cut some of these alphabet agencies out as well, like in particular the ATF.
Oh, of course.
Which is like a completely corrupt organization. I mean, they're so corrupt that back in the 90s when there was actual serious talk going through the halls of D.C. about getting rid of them, they asked the question, well, what do we do with these agents? They're federally sworn agents. Well, we'll send them off to the FBI and all these other bureaus. And all the other bureaus said, no, we don't want them. Absolutely not. You are not letting those people into my agencies because they were so corrupt.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that, but absolutely we need to get rid of these agencies. First on my list would be the Department of Education, because education is a local issue. Parents, teachers, and students should be able to choose their own education. There's absolutely no reason to get the federal government involved. So right now we've got kind of a one-size-fits-all where people in Appalachia are being told to have the same kind of government or the same kind of education as people in downtown New York. Well, maybe they have different needs. Maybe they have different ways of doing things. So the Department of Education has not helped at all. Educational quality hasn't gone up. In fact, if anything, it's gone down. So why do we need them? Let's get rid of them.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they pretty much destroyed education with that Common Core system that they put in place.
Yep.
Dr. Duke Pesta, who I've met here in Wisconsin, had a brilliant lecture and a brilliant presentation about how bad Common Core is and where it came from and who's making all the money off of it. So that's going to be a tough one, though, because even Ronald Reagan couldn't get rid of it.
Keep in mind, first of all, a lot of people have the misconception that Ronald Reagan gave us smaller government.
No, he didn't.
Because, yes, he did cut taxes. Here's the problem, though. He didn't cut spending. Government got bigger every year of the 8 years that he was in office. And every time the Congress gave him a budget that wasn't balanced, he signed it. And if I were president and I were given about a budget that wasn't smaller, that wasn't balanced, I would tell him I refused to sign it. Go back and work on it some more. So, because here's the thing, Art Laffer and Ronald Reagan were correct. If you decrease taxes, that gives people greater motivation to work. And so you get more money in overall. But instead of just cutting the taxes even further or giving people their money back, they were flush with all this money. And once again, you give politicians money and it's, oh, what can we spend it on this week?
Yeah, that was supposed to be one of Donald Trump's other big thing. I mean, this guy, he's supposed to be a brilliant businessman. This is one of the reasons people voted for him. He's a businessman. He's not a politician. He understands how to work within a budget. And he signed every single bloated budget that crossed his desk so far.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't know how to count. Well, to put it in more of a truthful aspect, you never spend other people's money as carefully as you spend your own. And I don't think he would continue to be as successful as he is in business if he didn't look after his own spending. But when it comes to the government, he's not spending his money. He's spending our money, and it's criminal.
Yeah, and it's and the budget and the government is constantly on the upswing. We're borrowing more money, throwing us deeper into debt that we're, at this point, I don't think we're ever going to crawl out of it. Because even if you look at the national debt clock, it says we're $24 trillion in the hole now, approximately. But if you look at all the unfunded mandates, we're closer to somewhere in the neighborhood, somewhere between 50 and 100 trillion in the hole. So I'm trying, this is the question that I got to have for everybody who wants to sit in the Oval Office. How are we going to get ourselves out of this debt?
The only way to do, you know, if you're digging a hole, the first thing you need to do is stop digging.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it looks like the Libertarian Party, the Libertarian members are going to be the only people who are going to get into office and stop digging the holes. And that's what I would do, is first stop digging, stop spending money. We need to slash the budget. And people are afraid to cut the military, even though, as we talked about, we're doing so many things that we shouldn't be doing. And we need to realize that Social Security is just a broken system, and we just got to take people's retirements out of the hands of Congress people. And these Congress people, of course, they have their own good government pensions. And what about the rest of us?
Yeah, I remember when Ron Paul was bringing all this up, everybody started attacking him and calling him crazy, from the other two parties. And I got to always tell them, it's like, look, I have been involved in the political system. I was Republican on the Central Committee in Los Angeles County. Okay, I saw what was going on with these people. So you can't convince me that the Republicans are any better than the Democrats.
No, and like I said, if Trump, an outsider, can't do it, who can?
Yeah.
So. Well, I hate to cut this. You know, I've really enjoyed talking with you, but I do have another interview coming up here.
Well, you gave me actually a lot more time than I was expecting, so I appreciate it.
I did, and I still hated to end now, but I could. You know, I am a libertarian. I could talk for hours.
Okay. Well, give everybody out your website and how they can get hold of you if they want to join the campaign or donate some money.
I appreciate that. It's JOJ2020.com. Again, JOJ2020.com. And we need donations so that we can send the message, send the message that they're not doing a good job. We need somebody new. And we would also love to get help volunteering. And what we've been really surprised about and just overly ecstatic from is that we are getting so many non-libertarian volunteers. So this has just been a great movement.
Okay, great. And once again, congratulations on your nomination. I hope it comes to fruition. I really do, because we definitely need something else in D.C.
Well, yes, we do. So, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So have a great day.
All right. You have a good one. Nice talking to you.
You too. All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. So that was Joe Jorgensen from the Libertarian Party. And if you listen to her, she's the Libertarian Party, I like them a lot because they absolutely look at the situation that this country is in a completely different way than the Democrats or the Republicans. Democrats and Republicans right now are simply just attacking each other. Everybody's pointing fingers and blaming each other for everything, and yet nothing ever gets fixed. And I mean never gets fixed. Okay, they both talk about, as Joe was talking about, fixing the budget. They never want to fix the budget. They never do it. They're never going to bring the troops home. They're not going to shut down bases across the world, which are costing American people trillions of dollars. They're not going to stop these idiotic government contracts that really don't amount to anything. And if you think I'm kidding, remember Halliburton with that cost-plus no-bid contract that they had where they simply sent equipment over to the Middle East, and when it broke down, they burned it so they just get some more, and then they'd bill the government and the taxpayers for it. Getting rid of these alphabet agencies, again, like the ATF, which is one of the most corrupt in the country. We could also get rid of the Bureau of Land Management, the Department of Natural Resources. We could get rid of whole bunches, swaths of these basically useless bureaucracies that, number one, don't answer to the American people because they're not elected. But every time they come up with a regulation, not a law, a regulation, they enforce it at the barrel of a gun as if it were law. And you get fined and you get dragged in front of court if you're not following their regulations. And this is one of the biggest issues I have with, you know, everybody loves Donald Trump. I think the guy's trying. I think he's really trying to navigate Washington, D.C., but he's doing it pretty much on his own. And he's got that little Grima Wormtongue character, Jared Kushner, speaking in his ear all the time, basically steering him in the wrong direction. And it's something we really need to stop. The Libertarian Party, I think, has such a much better platform. They can't get any traction because, and I really wish they could, and I'm really out here trying to push it. They need to get better traction, but the mainstream media is going to be completely against them because they've been bought off. The Republican and the Democrat Party basically choose who's going to be on the debate stage. So when it comes to the presidential debates, after everybody's had their primaries, the nominations are all in order. Joe Biden, presumably for the Democrats, Donald Trump, presumably for the Republicans. Joe, who is the nominee for the Libertarian Party, and all the other different parties. You have the Green Party, the Constitution Party, the American Independence, and all the rest of them. They're never going to get on the debate stage. Okay? They don't want them there. They don't want to see those presentation of ideas. When Ron Paul was on the debate stage during the Democrat debates back in 2011, 2012, every time he opened his mouth, everybody went nuts because he actually spoke common sense. Okay, the Democrat and the Republican parties are not about common sense. They are about staying in power. And that's it. There's other people who, as Joe was talking about and we were discussing, the lobbyists are writing the laws. They're floating the cash into Washington, D.C. You know, your average American is completely screwed. So we really got to have – this is why I only want really to have libertarian candidates on this show. This is why I interviewed Adam Kokesh and Max Abramson and Vermin Supreme. And I would have liked to have got several others, but before I could actually even ask them, Joe secured the nomination for the Libertarian Party. Because what am I going to ask the Republicans and the Democrats that I'm not actually just going to sit here and tear them apart on? Don't get me wrong, I would love to have my congressman come on the show because I would tear him a new one. That guy would be crapping out of two holes by the time I got done with him. My senator, either one of them, Tammy Baldwin or Ron Johnson, go ahead and come on my show. I dare you, because I will rip you up. And this is only the people who are on the federal level. I get some state people on here too. I'll tear you a new one. What is wrong with you? Why are you allowing this much government to interfere in our lives? And this is why the Libertarian Party really has appealed to me for so long, is because they really want government out of your life. You don't need them interfering. Every time they interfere in your life, they screw your life up. Name one thing in recent history, in the last 50 years, that the Republican Party or the Democrat Party has done to better your life. They always have that question as if it's a badge of honor of some sort, where they come up and they, during election season, and they say, is your life better than it was 4 years ago? No, it's worse. And it doesn't matter which party of the duopoly is in there. My life is not better because you're in it screwing me up. I would have said the F word, but I'm trying to be nice. Okay, I don't want the government involved in every aspect of everything I do. They regulate the size of how big my toilet tank can be. So now I have to flush my crapper twice to get it all to go down. Otherwise, I got a floater sitting in there. You know, they regulate your water quality, even though they can't even do that right because they keep sticking fluoride in it. You know, they tax you for the air. They tax you for the right to even live on your own property that you paid for. You know, this is really just a nightmare. And talking to Joe, and I've met Ron Paul, nice guy. I mean, really nice guy. Listen to everything the guy said. Listen to Milton Friedman. Go to the Mises Institute. See what they have to say about the free market economies. Okay. So anyway, we will be back here in a few minutes, everybody. Hang tight, stay tuned, and we will see you in a minute.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look! left as a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
You're what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
All right, thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now, we're going to get back to your host.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. This is For Liberty, and again, once again, I am your host, Nick, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Please go to the website, donate some money if you have a little bit of extra hanging around in your pocket, or go on there and check out the people have advertised little products for sale and buy some advertising space. We are 100% listener supported, and every little bit helps to keep us on the air. Remember, mainstream media is not telling you the truth. Mainstream media is not interviewing Joe Jorgensen. So anyway, what I wanted to do for the entirety of this show, and I got the interview with Joe, which kind of put that idea aside. But I'll play as much of this as I can. A year ago, I interviewed Howard Strauss, who is the grandson of Max Gerson, who came up with the Gerson therapy. And I met him at his mother's memorial service last March in Walnut, California. And he actually agreed to come on the show. He came on the show. I was really thrilled to death that he did it. The video that I have been cutting together for a while now, and the reason it took me so long was because every time the guy mentioned something, and all I wanted to do was do a really quick cut into this video that will be up on YouTube tomorrow, and there's a reason it'll be up tomorrow, is that every time he said something, it led me into hours of research that I never even planned on doing. It was one of the most eye-opening things that I have done in quite a long time, aside from first getting the gerbil back on the wheel inside my head and the little light bulb going on. This interview with Howard Strauss was – the interview itself was okay. Doing the research behind it, just trying to get images to put into a video so that you can watch it on YouTube and you don't have to sit there and stare at just one single graphic for the entire time. There's different things that will show up. bits and pieces that of things that I got out of putting this thing together was just the amount of information was mind-numbing, which is why it was taking me, like, to do cut 5 minutes of video together was taking me about 3 or 4 hours to do. Not because it was hard to cut the video part of it, but because I was busy reading so much other stuff. I was busy reading Journal of the American Medical Association back from the 1930s and the 1920s. And reading about the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rockefeller University, you see, and all the amount of hijacking that they did, which I mentioned with Joe in the previous hour. But the reason that I'm putting this video out on YouTube tomorrow, I'm uploading it tomorrow morning, is because 1 month after I did this interview with Howard. By the way, if you have to understand what I'm about to tell you is, you have to understand when I met this guy, he was 76, did not look 76 years old, you know, except for maybe the gray hair. Probably one of the healthiest people you will ever meet in your life. I mean, this guy lived, eat, and breathed the Gerson diet and the Gerson therapy and all of that for pretty much his entire life. His mom, Charlotte, pretty much drilled that into his head. This guy lived an absolutely healthy lifestyle. So one day on June 10th of last year, he's out walking his dog and simply drops dead of a heart attack. Okay, you're not, and I learned that last November or December when I met up with a friend of mine who is trying to get a movie made about Max Gerson. And I said, yes, I want to have Howard Strauss back on my show because I want to do like a follow-up interview. She said, you can't. He's already dead. That absolutely shocked me. The reason that she told me that he was dead shocked me even more, because there is no way in hell that this guy dropped dead of a heart attack. Impossible. Didn't happen. Not by natural means anyway. This guy probably had cleaner arteries than anybody else. This was not a natural occurrence. You cannot convince me that they didn't take this count. Shortly afterwards, while I was working on getting other pieces of the video, and then what I would do is he would mention something and I would go on the internet and I would try to find images and cut them in relative to what we were talking about at the time. He was mentioning the different Gerson websites, especially the GersonFoundation.org, doesn't even exist on the internet anymore. It was taken down. There was a second one that was taken down. Fortunately, you can still find some of the documentaries that has been done. I just watched one the other day called Dying to Have Known. But they are mainstream medical academia is really working to take this down. And matter of fact, in Dying to Have Known, they actually did a couple of interviews with Dr. Dean Adell, who's basically a radio star. And he said, nope, Gerson therapy doesn't work. It we have to dismiss that out of hand because there's been no studies on it. And there was a few other doctors that said the same thing. And yet they ignored all the years of research that has been done, that had been done by Dr. Gerson, and the success stories that have been done and documented by Charlotte Gerson, Max Gerson, and Howard. And there was another doctor in Norway who had file cabinets full of medical records of people who actually were cured from cancer and various other diseases just by using the Gerson diet. So you're not going to convince me that Howard Strauss simply dropped dead of a heart attack. his mom, even being 97 years old, he was convinced that she did not die because of a because of the fall she took and broke some bones in her, I think, in her pelvis from the second fall. But it was because they started immediately giving her medications that they told her that they told the hospital not to give her. But they did anyway. She died shortly later. Max Gerson himself was poisoned by arsenic and died in 1959. His memoir, The Cure for Cancer, 50, and it was 50 cases that he had spelled out in the book. That first manuscript disappeared when he first ended up getting sick. When he healed himself through the Gerson therapies and he came back to his office, he found that the manuscript and a bunch of other material had disappeared. And he had to go back just through his memory and reconstruct the entire book. So I'm going to play for as much time as we have left. Just, you know, Howard, I met him. He was a nice guy. The memorial you can find on YouTube, the Charlotte Gerson Memorial, if you want to watch that, and various other documentaries under the Gerson name. But to me, the amount of information, just the amount of knowledge that I gained just from that one interview with Howard Strauss was so incredible. I just feel on the anniversary of his death, even though his anniversary of his death is tomorrow, I'm going to do a playback on it just so everybody can have a listen to it once again. You can find the video up on YouTube tomorrow on the For Liberty channel if you want to take a listen to it in full, because we're not going to have time to do the entire thing. So give me one second and you can listen to Howard Strauss and my interview with him from last year. By the way, I do apologize. At that time, my interviewing technique was not exactly as good as it is now. So you have to forgive me a little bit on that one. But so I'm going to give you Howard Strauss.
And Anderson developed a therapy. Right. Well, my name is Howard Strauss, and I am the grandson of Dr. Max Gerson, the very famous German physician Albert Schweitzer called the most eminent medical genius ever to walk among us. My mother is Charlotte Gerson, his daughter, Dr. Gerson's daughter. And Dr. Gerson developed a therapy for degenerative diseases, not just a degenerative disease, but all degenerative diseases. Back in the early 1900s, when he was a physician in Bielefeld, Germany, and he discovered when he used the diet that he was almost forced to use to escape his debilitating migraine headaches, he discovered that it also cleared up skin tuberculosis. And so he started to explore that and treat skin tuberculosis. And when he was doing that, he discovered that it cleared up whatever else was wrong, like diabetes and arthritis and high blood pressure and things like that. And he had to completely reorient himself as far as medical paradigm, because the medical paradigm of the time was one disease, one treatment. And here he had one treatment that was addressing and clearing multiple diseases. So he had to completely revamp his thinking about human health and how it worked. And so eventually what he discovered was that he was treating not a symptom or a set of symptoms, but he was treating the underlying healing system of the body using nutrition. And this set him, of course, on at odds with all of his colleagues in the medical profession, who were wedded to the pharmaceutical and chemical and surgical models of disease. And yet, here was a dietary approach that didn't involve medical procedures. It didn't involve pharmaceuticals. It didn't involve chemicals or surgery that could clear up all these degenerative diseases. So he continued that approach and eventually discovered that he could clear about 99% of all chronic illnesses using the dietary and detoxification approach. So including he also cured Mrs. Schweitzer early of lung tuberculosis. He cured Schweitzer's daughter of something nobody even had a name for, and eventually, as time passed by, and he was longtime good friends with Albert Schweitzer, he cleared up Schweitzer's type 2 diabetes. So then intervened the Second World War and the Holocaust, and he had to flee for his life with his family. And he went to Vienna. And then when Austria went Nazi, he had to flee to France. And pretty soon the French got agitated about the Germans. And he ended up in New York City, which is where my mother, Charlotte, met her husband, my father, Erwin Strauss. And that was just before the Second World War and the Holocaust. So Gerson continue his practice in New York City, and at the time tuberculosis was a big deal. It was a big problem. Since he had gotten famous in Germany for having cured tuberculosis of all kinds, not just skin tuberculosis, but lung tuberculosis, kidney, bone tuberculosis. And then whatever else presented along with tuberculosis, he initially attacked tuberculosis. But at the time, by that time, the Rockefeller Foundation had begun to build cancer up as a major profit center. And that's what they were doing. They were building it up as a major profit center. And so he started to address cancer with the same therapy as he did tuberculosis. Since his first two or three cancer cases in Germany had cleared up very nicely, and ever since then he was kind of obsessed with the idea that he had something to offer in the cancer question. And from then on, as cancer increasingly took center stage as a major fearful dread disease, and tuberculosis faded with more better treatment, better sanitation, and so forth. And eventually, he became well known for his cancer therapy, the cancer therapy we still use, and the cancer therapy that still works very nicely. Thank you. So Gerson continued his cancer treatment, and his colleagues in New York were appalled at this because he could reverse and prevent cancer without use of any medical or surgical techniques or pharmaceuticals. And at the time, the medical world was dominated by the Rockefeller Foundation. And Rockefeller was the main force behind turning U.S. medicine into a drug vending machine.
Right. Yeah. So creating customers, not cures.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you consider, I mean, just as a little side effect here, let me ask you, with all the millions, billions spent on medical research, and the billions contributed to various different single disease organizations. Can you tell me a single chronic illness that has been cured in the last 25 years?
I don't think they have one.
Not as, one.
I mean, as a matter of fact, I was reading an article the other day because of the homeless situation going on in California that's starting to spread around. They said that tuberculosis is coming back. And it's an incurable disease.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not, of course, because we, Dr. Gerson cured it quite handily. As a matter of fact, are you familiar with the big ski resorts in Switzerland, in Gstaad and Kitzbühel? And
I've never been there, but I know about them.
Well, you know about them, these huge hotels that are on these high mountains and they're ski resorts.
Yeah.
They didn't start out that way. They started out as tuberculosis sanatoria early 1900s, because it was believed that tuberculosis was caused by the bad air and crowded conditions in cities. Mm-hmm. And so the people who had money would spend money to get away and to be housed in these tuberculosis sanatoria in the high mountains with a clear air, and the pure air was much more conducive, supposedly, to good health. Well, this went along for quite a while, and since there were a lot of people with money and a lot of people with tuberculosis, these hotels were built all over Gstaad and Kitzbühel and all of these beautiful, big, huge hotels, grand hotels in the high mountains. Well, when Dr. Gerson started to become famous for having cured tuberculosis using diet and nutrition and had nothing to do with the crowded conditions in cities, all of the people started to use that instead of going to these high mountain, extremely expensive resorts to for the cure, because they could do it right at home in their kitchen. And suddenly, these big, huge hotels had to find something better to do with their space and their time, because people were not coming to them for TB anymore.
Right.
And that's when they all converted to being ski resorts.
Huh. Okay. Didn't know that. That's
yeah. But of course, in New York City, went with the Rockefellers behind cancer as a dread disease, as a profit center, they were not interested whatsoever in curing anything, much as the situation is today.
Right.
And so they spent much of their time and energy and effort slandering and opposing Dr. Gerson and his methods. And Dr. Morris Fishbein was the head of the AMA at the time, and he spent a lot of his he was the editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association, and he spent a lot of his time and editorial space badmouthing Dr. Gerson and other natural cures. Mm-hmm. So you can still find some of those articles. I mean, they're really, really nasty. He was an expert at that. Everybody else in the medical profession was scared of him because he wrote such vicious stuff. But eventually, it got to the point where the Rockefellers could see that this guy was, if they didn't stop him, that he was going to ruin their whole plan of building cancer into a huge business.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the things that I even see these days is, and one of the reasons that I don't donate to cancer research when they see it on TV, oh, St. Jude's, we're going to do cancer research for the kids. And it's always, we're researching better ways to do chemo and radiation for treating cancer. Right. But that's all they ever do is chemo and radiation.
Well, that's because, consider the effect. If they adopted the Gerson therapy, okay, the Gerson therapy does not depend on expensive drugs, on big expensive radiation machines, on expensive surgeries and hospitals and so forth. And the oncologists know that no matter what they do to treat a symptom, they're not treating the underlying cause.
Right.
And so the disease will eventually recur.
Yeah, that's what I tried to – sorry to interrupt, but I tried to tell that to my mom when she got cancer.
They caught it early, so, you know, but I tried to send her the books for the Gerson diet and try to tell her to do something alternative. And I hear this from everybody, so it almost makes you want to stop trying to tell them about it. The answer to me is always, but the doctor said.
Yes, my doctor said.
Right.
And, you know, people call me up in desperate situations every day. And they ask me, they say, I've just been diagnosed with something horrible. And my doctor says that I've got two months to live. And I heard about the Gerson therapy. What do you have to offer me? Right. And so I tell them about it and I describe the Gerson therapy and they say, well, but my doctor says, mm-hmm. I said, well, you might listen to him. Or you might want to listen to him then, because if your doctor, if you had the confidence in your doctor, to repair the damage or to heal you, you wouldn't have called me in the first place, wouldn't it?
Right.
So having called me, seeking out help, because your doctor can't do anything about it, maybe you might want to listen to what I have to say. So, right. You know, but my doctor says is a common refrain. People are so brainwashed that the guys in the white coats know what they're doing because they have these certificates all over the walls and they have meetings, they have tumor boards, and they have very powerful and deadly chemotherapy, and they have huge machines. And so forth, but they can't cure the disease.
Yeah, I mean, aren't they even kind of restricted from prescribing anything except chemo and radiation in terms of cancer and under threat of maybe they'll lose their license?
It's not maybe. It's more than just lose their license nowadays. Now when people are actually healing disease, there are a certain number of doctors who try working outside the box and actually healing the disease. When that happens, they are actually in danger of their lives now. In the past 3 years, well over 100 doctors or chiropractors or naturopaths or nutritionists have been murdered. Because they've been healing disease that is worth too much money to treat, and so you know there's and you know that it's a problem. You know that it's a conspiracy because with 100 doctors having been murdered or disappeared or suicided, there hasn't been a single suspect. There hasn't been a single investigation. No cause of death. Cause of death is often suicide, including 5 shots in the back.
Yeah, of course.
We're just plain disappeared. So there's no investigation, no government word, no word in the newspapers.
You'd almost think Hillary Clinton was behind it.
I'm sure they'll find some way to blame her. But the and by the way, as much as I dislike the current regime, Hillary Clinton was no angel.
Not even close.
She gave an hour long speech in praise of Monsanto on the campaign trail.
Well, I see her in favor of using seeds and products that have a proven track record that you say, and I agree, is scientifically provable, and continue to try to make the case to those who are skeptical that they may not know what they're eating already, because the question of genetically modified food or hybrids has gone on for many, many years.
And I'm sorry, that's enough for me. I can't support anybody who supports the most evil corporation on the planet.
Yeah, I tell people around here about what, because they spray Roundup everywhere around here to control the weeds. I live in the middle of farm country, and even the Amish people do it. And I keep asking them, why do you spray this stuff all over the ground? You know, it's poisonous. Well, it kills the weeds, and you know, it can't be that bad. It's like,
then I have to go through the history of who Monsanto is. You know, Agent Orange in Vietnam, and how they're still having problems over there because of all the spraying that we did.
Oh, yeah.
And they just came down. A court actually sided with the plaintiff in a case against Monsanto, and they stated twice that, yes, Roundup does cause cancer. It's like, well, no kidding.
Well, the World Health Organization has identified the glyphosate, which is the main component. They claim to be the active component of Roundup, to be a class 2 carcinogen.
Right.
And so there's the two cases that you're citing with multi-million dollar awards to the plaintiffs. They have 11,000 cases queued up behind them. Same thing. 11,000.
Yeah, I'm sure Monsanto is fighting tooth and nail to stop that from happening.
Well, Bayer just bought Monsanto.
Yeah, that was just last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. So they are now in deep yogurt because they have. With the purchase of Monsanto, they have bought the liability for all of those 11,000 lawsuits.
Right. good luck to them. The other thing I always try to explain to people about the chemo and radiation, I mean, well, take the case, the glyphosate. Okay, that's poison. You're putting poison in your body, you get cancer. So how are they going to treat it? They treat it with chemo. Does anybody really know where chemo actually came from?
Well, yes, of course.
Yeah, it was mustard gas used in World War I.
Right.
And that's where they came up with that one. And then, of course, so you're putting more poison in your body. That's not going to do good for you. And then they come up with hitting you with radiation. And last time I checked, radiation actually causes cancer.
Yeah, do you remember the atom bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Yeah,
and the cancer they had for years and years and years afterwards, and Fukushima
and look at Chernobyl.
Chernobyl, exactly. Radiation causes cancer.
Yeah. I just saw.
I don't know what these people are thinking, if they're thinking at all.
I actually just saw a show about this guy who's a fisherman. He fishes all over the world, and he actually got permission to go to Chernobyl to catch fish. And they had him in a hazmat suit, and he could still only stay. He could only stay there for 5 days because after that he'd overdose on the radiation and start causing more problems. It's like, yeah, you're going to get cancer. Back in the 50s, I believe it was 50s or 60s, when they made Ben Hur with John Wayne, they shot some of the footage out on the old testing sites in Nevada, and a whole bunch of people who worked on that film came down with cancer.
What a surprise.
Yeah. And look at the depleted uranium over in the Middle East that we've been shooting all over the place.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
War syndrome, but, you know, to try to be able to blow it off.
When the Iraqi woman has a child, you know, the first thing they do, they don't count his fingers anymore. They count how many heads he has. Really.
Whether or not he glows in the dark.
Really. Because there is basically a layer of depleted uranium underneath the top few inches of topsoil all over the country.
Right.
In the civilian population in southern Iraq, the Iraqi doctors are reporting very large increases in cancer, leukemia, diabetes, immune system disorders, and of course, birth defects in the newborns.
And then he had, what's his name? Dr. Rocky, I believe his name was, who was actually hired by the government to go over there and figure out how to clean it up. And he got really sick, and of course, they treated him with the conventional treatment. And I think he's had like somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 operations or something. I'm probably wrong on that. It's probably more, but he's had a lot. And he got sick, and they asked him, "Well, what's your conclusion?" He said, "There's no way to clean it up."
Yeah. Nice. So, well, the question is, if he had 50 operations, you know, at some point you got to say, "Wait a minute, is this really working?"
Right.
And try something else. But unfortunately, money stuffed in their ears and their eyes doesn't allow them to see anything beyond beyond the dollar signs.
Yeah, and we're all the guinea pigs.
We're not guinea pigs. No. We're not guinea pigs anymore. We're the piggy banks. They exist to drain us of all of our resources before they toss us on the scrap heap.
Yeah, that was the one thing I said to my mom too. I was like, you know what the difference between doing the Gerson diet and doing the chemo and radiation is? And she goes, well, what? And I'm like, well, your bank account's going to be empty.
Right,
doing
exactly.
The other one. That's that, and then they're not going to have any more use to treat you. They're going to tell you you're all better.
Oh, they'll say, well, nothing more we can do for you.
Right. Well, see, and that was one of the when I found out about the whole Gerson. I remember I saw it on G. Edward Griffin's website. I got a little more in depth of it when a friend of mine, Nancy, who's working on a script to do a biopic movie about Max Gerson's life, I read a little bit more about it, and he was taking stage 4 cancer patients into hospice care. I mean, these people were essentially the walking dead, and by the end of the treatment, they were walking out of there cancer free.
Well, who was doing this?
My friend Nancy Kramer. She's doing a film.
Yeah. I understand, but who was taking stage 4 cancer?
Max Gerson.
Yeah, Max Gerson. Absolutely right. Yeah, it doesn't matter. He always had people would always surprise him. He would take people who he thought were well beyond any help from even what he could do. And he would take them, and they would miraculously recover. So he eventually said, where there's life, there's hope. As long as you have some life in you, your body is amazing in its ability to heal.
Right. And all of that's on a diet. And given some of the stuff that we're eating nowadays, there was that great movie that came out years ago called Super Size Me.
Oh, yeah.
And just watching the guy put himself through that, I was just kind of like, I couldn't even do that. I mean,
Morgan Spurlock.
Yeah, Morgan. It was like watching him and you could see the physical changes in his body. Then, of course, you have the doctor's report saying, one doctor saying, stop doing this.
Please stop doing this. Yeah. You're killing yourself.
Right.
Your liver is turning into a fat pudding.
Right. And well, here's another thing that I'd like to get into, if you don't mind, regarding Gerson. When he had to leave, before he had to leave Germany and move out. Now, we know that he had a lot of opposition with the medical profession here in the United States. I mean, even the Senate had hearings on him, telling him to stop. What was the pushback in Europe, or was there any?
Oh, it was terrible. Not only was he operating outside of the medical paradigm that everybody had learned and that they took as delivered truth, and plus which they had the pharmaceutical companies backing them up.
Right. So it was the same.
But on top of that, he was Jewish, and right. the atmosphere in Europe, certainly before, and certainly Germany, before Second World War, was poisonous for Jewish anybody,
right.
much less people who were going up against the establishment anyway. Anybody who did something slightly out of whack with the established truth. It would be branded with so the physics at the time, they were looking at subatomic particles and so forth. They called that Jewish physics because the physicists who were doing the work were Jewish.
Right.
And so he got branded with that as well. Jewish medicine, Jewish this, Jewish that, right? Jewish mathematics. It was worse than just the opposition from the pharmaceutical companies and from conventional doctors who were making a fortune off of tuberculosis that they could not cure. And suddenly here was this doctor who could clear it up, you know, if you just by to quote a doctor from New York, by boiling carrots in a pot. they were incensed about that because they were making fortunes treating tuberculosis with things that they didn't that didn't work. And here comes this guy and says, "Oh no, no, just change what you have for lunch." And the tuberculosis would go away. they were so angry about that that they would organize like at medical conventions and things. His name was like a curse word.
Right. And you know, I still see a lot of that even today when I go to the Cancer Control Society convention in Los Angeles every year.
Yeah. Yes.
And there's a website out there that just calls it all quack science or quack
medicine.
Well,
that's right. By the way, are you aware where the word quack comes from?
I only thought it came from a duck. I never really got into the origins of it.
So back a long time ago, maybe 100 years ago, maybe more, 150, doctors, one of the remedies that they would use was mercury. Mercury. And you know how poisonous mercury is.
Yeah. It's the most poisonous.
The most poisonous non-radioactive metal that there is, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, George Washington did not die of a cold, of a very bad cold. He died because his doctor gave him a teaspoonful of mercury for his very bad cold. They had such a bad reputation at the time that their nicknames were quacks. Mercury is also called quicksilver,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what they called doctors who used mercury as a remedy, they called them quacksalvers, quacksalver. And they just shortened it eventually to quack. And so doctors would pejoratively be named quacks. And so doctors have now taken up that pejorative and applied it to doctors who don't want to do what they want to do, okay? Well, who don't want to use drugs and operations.
And that's kind of – I don't know if I would call that – I don't think that's called irony, but I think it's pretty funny that they would do that because, you know, when you get around mercury, look what happened with the fluorescent light bulbs. You know, you break one, you're supposed to call a hazmat team to come clean it up because of the
exactly.
mercury. Exactly. Yet they – These same doctors that are calling homeopathic physicians, you know, quacks, are the same ones who are giving you vaccines, and the stabilizer in it is mercury.
Exactly, quicksilver, which gave rise to the word quack itself.
Right. So, I mean, there's a disconnect there that I don't think they're getting.
Well, you know, whoever accused Americans of having the ability to do critical thinking anymore.
Yeah, that's true. They're not. The education system is certainly not teaching them that skill anymore.
Well, of course, you know, fluoride, both fluoride and glyphosate or Roundup and mercury all affect the brain's function. And so they're dumbing us down chemically as well as dumbing us down by removing our educational system.
Yeah. And I remember when I was in grade school, and long ago as that was, they would have, you know, these days where they'd come in and give you a checkup and in the school, you know, they had a doctor come in or the school nurse, and they would give you a cup of fluoride to rinse your mouth out with. And I heard one of the teachers say, and I still remember this, that fluoride is not good for your teeth. It actually destroys calcium. And I'm like, well, why are we drinking this then? You know, why are we rinsing our mouths out with it if it's destroying calcium? Well, just go ahead and do it. You know, just do it because you're told to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
when I went into the Navy in 1967, I went into the Navy because they were threatening to draft me into the Army. So I went to officer candidate school. And since I was going to be an officer and they were going to be responsible for taking care of my dental and medical needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to treat everybody with fluoride. fluoridate the teeth, because that was the the myth at the time, that fluoride was good for your teeth and it would be protect your teeth against cavities and so forth. And when we were marched off to the dental offices to have our teeth fluoridated, I declined. I said, no, I'm not going to have anyone do that. And the next person I got to talk to was a Navy captain, dentist. You know, I was an enlisted officer candidate, right, and this Navy captain was about 22 ranks above me. And he said, now, what's this nonsense that you say you don't want to have your teeth fluoridated? I said, well, because I believe the fluoride is a deadly poison. Oh, son, you just don't know. And I said, doctor, he was a dentist. I said, doctor, you just don't know, sir, captain.
That must have went over well.
Yeah, exactly. I said, it's a deadly poison. He said, now, where did you hear that? I said, from my grandfather. He said, well, you know, dental science says. I said, my grandfather can cure cancer. Can you? He looked at me long and hard. He said, you know, I could order you to have your teeth fluoridated. I said, well, you know, you could order me to do that. All you would get is a court martial, because I will not do that. You could order me to take arsenic, too.
Right.
I'm not going to do it. It's poison. And he looked at me for a long time and he said, oh, get out of my office. And I did not have my teeth fluoridated.
Yeah, they did that when I went into the Marines, too.
But nowadays, if you refuse, now they'll court martial you.
Yeah, they were. Back when I enlisted in the Marines, and they did the same thing. They gave us a little paper cup with the fluoride in it.
Mm-hmm.
And God forbid you turned it down, because they would run you ragged.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. So, yeah, they have their way of torturing you until you do it. But they didn't do that to me, because I'm considerably older than you are.
Right.
I'm. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks – it'll be my 76th birthday.
Oh, there you go. But in your, when I met you at the memorial service for your mom,
yeah.
I wouldn't have figured you were that old.
Well, yeah, but the, you know, that's because the Gerson therapy is also an anti-agathic. You understand the word?
Yes.
Anti-agathic is anti-aging therapy.
Yeah.
Because what we experience with the people around us, when we think of somebody who's 55 or 65 years old, we have in our mind an image of how much damage we've done over the years, and what happens to our skin, what happens to our spine, what happens to our bones, our teeth, and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessary. Our bodies renew themselves every 18 months. Totally. 100% of the body renews itself, is replaced every 18 months. That means on average, we are always 9 months old. On average. Always. For our entire lives.
Look, judging from some of the people that I've seen, you wouldn't know it. I mean, they, again, really poor diets and, you know, lack of exercise and whatever. And I, you know, you're seeing people who are around my age or maybe a little bit younger who are in so much worse condition.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'm not the pinnacle of health by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I know better than to let myself go that much.
Well, consider the fact that your body will replace itself every 18 months.
Right.
It has to replace itself with something, right? So it has to have the raw materials from somewhere. And the raw materials are what you put in your mouth. So you're feeding your system the materials with which to replace itself, to renew itself completely in 18 months. But if you eat lousy food, if you eat fast food and GMO food and canned, bottled, boxed, denatured food, and all cooked and nothing, no enzymes, nothing fresh, and that's what Americans do, what you're doing is you're putting in spare parts. You're putting in the repair parts that are garbage. They're from the junkyard. So, of course, in a year and a half, if you've built your body from zero in a year and a half with junk, you're going to have a junk body.
Right.
The good news is, however, that if you any time you choose to change that cycle and start eating good, whole, organic, fresh foods, and not eating animal protein and not eating salt and fat and food chemicals, your body will say, oh, good, now I can start using manufacturer's original parts to build the body for next year. And your body will once again, you know, it will be replaced in 18 months with a brand spanking new body. That's its job. That's what it does.
Right.
And all of us do that, by the way. So we all just by dint of having human DNA, our bodies do that. That's a gift from God.
Right.
And the fact that we abuse it so badly is why we age, and we age prematurely. So what you see around you of people who are my age, 76 years old, what you see around you of these people who are just about to expire, or, you know, bent over with osteoporosis or 300 pounds or are crippled with arthritis, right? This is all premature aging. It is not how human beings are supposed to age. So a healthy, good, healthy human life span should be between 110 and 120 years.
Yeah, that's what I remember reading that a while ago, was that the human body was designed to live well over 100 years.
Exactly, exactly. But we abuse it so badly that we expire after 65 or 60 or 70 years.
And I think that some of that's not even intentional. I think it's just because people are so used to going to the grocery store, they're not really aware of what they're buying. Even if they're buying health produce, they're buying stuff that has been genetically modified.
Exactly. You
know, or they go and they buy all these pre-prepared meals, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, like spaghetti, all that canned stuff. I can't even eat canned food anymore. It does not taste good to me any, because I can get it fresh now. I can grow my own.
Yeah.
So, but.
Yeah. So what, it may be unintentional on the part of the consumer, but it's not unintentional on the part of the supervising agencies who make sure that the food that we're eating is safe.
Well, yeah, and I hear this a lot. A lot of the farmers are very much restricted from what kind of fertilizers that they can put in the soil.
Exactly.
Especially if they're industrial farmers. You know, that's what they do. They grow whatever and package it and ship it off to market. They're told by the government that the only kind of fertilizer that's really acceptable is the ammonium nitrate, but that's not putting anything back into the soil.
Exactly. And that's the problem. So you know, we are under this blanket of secrecy that is aimed at keeping us sick and keeping us subservient and subject to doctors.
Right, and I think that's and it's really a shame, because I think there are really some good doctors out there who really want to move in that direction, but. Again, they don't.
And if they do, I just told you,
yeah.
In the last 3 years, over 100 doctors have been murdered, suicided, disappeared, or otherwise done away with.
Right. And look at what happened with your grandfather, too. He had to actually leave the United States and set up practice down in Mexico because he was being hammered on by the government so much.
Stop.
No.
He didn't set up in Mexico.
Oh, I thought he did.
No, he was in New York, and he was assassinated in New York.
Right.
My mother set up in Mexico.
Oh, okay. I had that part wrong then. I thought that your grandfather
had done it. Because it's absolutely, absolutely impossible for a doctor, for an MD, to practice the Gerson therapy in the United States. They will take away his license. They will kill him. They'll do something. They'll destroy his reputation. They'll take away his license. They'll do something. This is absolute. They do not want word one of the Gerson therapy and the possibilities and the opportunities with the Gerson therapy to escape into the public.
Right. Now, let's get into that part. Having him in New York and getting assassinated. How exactly did that take place?
Well, I wish I could tell you with absolute certainty how exactly it took place. But you know, nobody keeps documentary evidence of that kind of stuff around, right? But he came back. He went on. Let me see how this happened. Oh yes, he went on the radio on the Long John Nebel show on WOR in New York City. Long John Nebel had invited him to be part of a panel on elective surgery. Elective surgery. That means surgery that wasn't an emergency, didn't right. have to be done, but you know, you could choose to do it now or later, right? Like for instance, an arthritic knee, right? So he was supposed to be part of a panel of other doctors talking about elective surgery. And Long John started the panel discussion. And by the way, I have a CD of that interview, or most of the interview. And he started talking about the various different things. And when he got around to my grandfather, the answers that Dr. Gerson gave him were so interesting and so intriguing to him and to the other. And to the other panelists, that they said, "Oh, listen, we don't want to speak. We want to hear what Dr. Gerson has to say." And pretty soon, it devolved into an interview of Dr. Gerson by Long John Nebel, where he was talking about his experience and his therapy and the Food and Drug Administration and how the food was denatured and polluted and so forth, including cigarettes and alcohol. And Long John Nebel is going, "Oh my God, there's all my damn sponsors. All my sponsors gone." And at one point he actually even said, "Does anybody out there know of a job for an
Everybody, we're
going
to have to cut the show here.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. See you guys next week, everybody. Have a good one. Stay safe.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started? Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the game to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio.